Welcome, everybody, to the podcast I utterly can't. I don't have any punny jokes today to tell, but Jen's got some evil men to talk about. One in specific.
Yes, we're going to talk mainly about one because he is awful. So in honor of my recent return to the wonderful world of dating, I thought we would head first right into the worst case scenario possible. Because let's face it, the dating pool has a lot worse than pee in it. It really does.
Now, my question is the whole, if you pee in the pool in some areas, do they really have a chemical in there that turns it blue?
No.
Oh.
No, I've swam my whole life. No. In fact, I was Red Cross certified when I was like 7. That is not a thing.
Okay. Well, I was just curious, you know, because grown-ups, I was watching that recently this weekend.
Right.
On there, it shows that. So, you know,
That's dramatized.
Okay.
But yes. So today we're going to talk about a lonely hearts killer. I don't know if anybody else has heard of them, but this is a thing that still happens today. The story we're going to talk about today actually took place in 1931.
Holy cow. I didn't realize it was that.
It's an old story. But okay, so I have to share a little weird thing. You'll figure out the date at the end, but the date I came up with this was a few days ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the 22nd today. Keep March 18th in mind for the end of our story.
Okay.
Weird coincidence, because that's about when I came up with the idea. Okay. So, just to get a little bit of statistics out there, 3 out of 10 Americans currently say that they have used an online dating site sometime in their life.
I know I have.
I have too. I've tried them all pretty much, except for like the paid ones, because I'm too cheap. I don't have money for that. I ain't got time for that. I don't have money. I'm a single mom working 2 jobs. I can't pay for my dating. Like, that's not going to happen. And let's face it, I don't meet people in an organic, real way. It doesn't happen because I don't get out.
It's hard when you're a single mom to do the organic way of dating, just because. I mean,
I'm not gonna run up to some guy checking produce out in Walmart and go, "Hey, baby, you're cute." Like, I'm not gonna do that. That's not me, and nobody's gonna do it to me because half the time I have earbuds in anyway. Like, I'm probably pretty unapproachable. In fact, the security guard at my night job, he was like, "You know, you're really intimidating." I was like, "I'm intimidating? Like, how?" Apparently, I'm intimidating.
Hey, me too. So, you know, we're in the same boat there.
Apparently not intimidating enough, but I'm intimidating. So according to PewResearch.org, which I checked just yesterday, 53% of adults aged 18 to 29 have been on online dating or actively online dating. And in our age bracket, the 30 to 49-year-olds, approximately 37% have searched for love on the interwebs. That's a lot.
That is a lot. But in this day and age, can you blame people, honestly?
Not really. In fact, in 2022, there were over 366 million online daters. And they're projecting that by 2027, there'll be over 440 million online daters.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of people who don't want to go outside.
No kidding.
I mean, I can't blame you. Like, but dating as a whole is pretty terrifying, right? Like, the idea of having to open up to a stranger and learn about their likes and their dislikes, their favorite colors, their traumas, all of that surface level bullshit, I'm so sick of having to go through. And, you know, when you hope you find a good one and you're not totally sure, because there's a lot of weirdos, stalkers, players, mama's boys, immaturity, there's a lot of that out there. So it is still terrifying, even in today's modern world. Over the years, I know I've encountered like all kinds. And a lot of my relationships have started online. So, you know, it it was interesting to hear the story. Something told me to look up the story, and I don't know what. But before we could simply swipe right or left on our phones, dating a stranger was even scarier than it is today. Do you know how you dated strangers back in the day?
I know that before dating apps were a thing, or even before Facebook was really a thing, there was such a thing as called Craigslist.
Okay, this predates Craigslist. So back in the day, there were newspaper classified ads. If for young people who might be listening, if you're millennial or younger, newspapers are large printed sheets that have writing and pictures, and people actually used to read them to keep up to date with current events and news in their area. You may not know what this is, but it's a thing.
There were also, I like how you said millennials, because I'm part of that millennial generation.
We're the elder millennials. We're not the new ones. We're the zennials. Like, we're not them. Like, we remember Oregon Trail. We remember life before the internet. In fact, I remember as a young adult looking for jobs, I used to look at the classified ads for jobs, and there were personals there where people, lonely people, would pay to run an ad for people to try to connect with, and kind of like eHarmony, Plenty of Fish if you pay for it, OkCupid, not that I've been on any of those. Just never paid for them.
I didn't think OkCupid still existed, because I remember being on there when it was still part of the Facebook platform.
No, it is very much still there, and yours truly may actually have a current account that just got initiated a few days ago. But it's lame. It is lame. I'm not going to lie. It's lame. I don't even really log on to it, because I'm like, this just gives me ick. Maybe it's just not time for me to start doing this again after coming out of a relationship a month ago. I don't know. But it does still give me the ick. Like, ugh. And reading this story gives me an even worse ick. I'm not even going to lie. So back in the day, people would pay for an advertisement, and they would ideally find somebody that they thought their description clicked with, and they would start writing them letters and corresponding through these newspaper ads, and also through like magazines, like Lonely Hearts magazine was a thing. Yeah, very, very strange, right? So,
well, not so much, but I mean, it is in comparison to today.
So way back when, in 1931, one online dater called himself Cornelius Orvin Pearson. Now, Cornelius Orvin Pearson sounds like a weirdo name for me, but I guess back in 1931, it was different. He took an ad out in a Lonely Hearts Club ad that said, "Wealthy widower, worth $150,000, which was close, it was like a millionaire back then, has an income of $400 to $2,000 a month, owns a beautiful 10-room brick home completely furnished with everything that would make a good woman happy. My wife would have her own car and plenty of spending money, would have nothing to do but enjoy herself." That sounds pretty damn good. Like,
I know that my coworker Faye, she said, if I ever marry again, it's going to be strictly for money. And so in that sense, that ad would probably, you know, sound pretty damn good for somebody who, you know, maybe had a few mishap marriages. And
or maybe even not ever married, like me. I'm in the spinster category, never married. Mostly because I got a broken picker. We know this. We've established this. It's broken. I mean, it just, it does not work like it should.
We all have broken pickers up until some point.
I think we do. Mm-hmm. Now, old Cornelius wasn't who he said he was. His real name is actually Harm Drunth, which his name, Harm, H-A-R-M, Harm, like what he's going to do to somebody.
That's even worse than Cornelius.
I mean, Cornelius would be an upgrade from Harm. Like, if somebody's told me their name was Harm, it's like, I'm getting the fuck away from you. Not at all. He was actually born in 1892 in Beerta in the Netherlands. He immigrated to the U.S. in 1910, where he first started living in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and moved to West Virginia in 1926.
Okay.
According to Wikipedia, in 1927, he married Luella Strother, an owner of a farm and a grocery store, after responding to her Lonely Hearts advertisement.
Huh.
Now remember,
that's how he became a wealthy widower.
Yeah. And remember, we said got married in 1927. We're talking about 1931.
Mm-hmm.
So he apparently didn't derive the monetary success. Maybe even it was emotional or romantic. Who knows? Because this man never told his side of the story completely. He continued to place that Lonely Hearts ad we just read. He continued to do it. In fact, so many women wrote in to respond to him that the postal records later indicated that replies to his advertisements poured in at a rate of 10 to 20 letters per day.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm. He also constructed a garage and a basement in his home where he lived in Quiet Dell, and that was in West Virginia. Although, when he started corresponding with people, he would tell them he lived in Iowa still.
Huh.
Right? And a little, this is starting to sound a little weird.
How can you tell people that you lived in Iowa and then have a completely different address in a different state?
Right. Now, it sounds like he was kind of never a good guy. He had a record already. He was incarcerated for burglary under his birth name, his actual name, Harmdrenth, in Barron County, Wisconsin in 1921 and 22.
Of course he was from Wisconsin.
Of course. Something.
Sorry, Wisconsin people.
Now, he was never charged, but he was suspected involvement in the 1928 disappearance of Dudley Seed Wade, a carpet sweeper salesman with whom he had once worked.
Huh.
So, he was already kind of a bad dude. There was already some suspicion. Married. You suddenly are constructing a garage and a basement, which we'll talk about later. Under his alias, he assumed, he was writing letters to these women, and he found one he struck up a courtship with. Her name was Asta Eicher, or it could be Asta, I don't know how you pronounce it. She was a widowed 49-year-old single mother of three from Parkridge, Illinois. Mm-hmm. She had three children, Greta, age 14, Harry, age 12, and Annabelle, age 9.
Did the kids come out okay?
No.
No!
Let's talk about it. So, okay. Good old Cornelius and their mother struck up a long-distance romance, and she told everybody she had fallen in love. And on June 23rd, 1931, he came to visit her. Shortly after, they went on a romantic rendezvous for several days, and she left her kids with a sitter. Hmm. And after several days, the sitter got a letter saying that Pearson was going to come get the children. Supposedly, he was going to come take the family on a European vacation.
Sounds amazing.
So, yeah. European vacation with a stranger taking your kids. Like, nobody meets my kid until I've known them for 6 months. Like, right. 6 solid months in person. I gotta know you. I gotta know everything about you. I gotta know how you sleep. I gotta know how you eat. Like, I need to do background checks. So it's crazy to me to think that this woman's like, yeah, let's have you come visit me and all my kids. I mean, that's a level of desperation that is really sad. Yeah. But not to speak ill of the dead.
I've been there. I don't have three children, you know. I mean, I do now. But at the time that I was
I didn't.
I had one. And I've been in that kind of, you know, but still. Yeah,
a little crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So good old Cornelius came to pick up the kids. And when he arrived, he actually sent one of the kids, it doesn't name who, but one of the kids was sent to cash a check to withdraw money from their mother's bank account.
Huh.
The child came home empty-handed because the bank realized that the check was a forgery.
Of course it was.
Then, him and the kids disappeared.
Oh, no.
He was reported as telling everybody the family was on a European trip. A little bit later, he began courting another woman. Her name was Dorothy Pressler Lemke. Dorothy was also a 49-year-old woman, so clearly he had a thing for the 49-year-olds. She was divorced, and she was also a nurse from Northborough, Massachusetts. Somehow, he convinced her to withdraw $4,000 from her bank account and move to Iowa to marry him.
I'm sorry, but I, even if I had that amount of money and
right
when I was dating my husband, if he had wanted me to say, take that and move to Pennsylvania with him, and
you would have been like, hell no.
No, if you have $4,000 to help me move, then yes, but I'm not going to cash out my $4,000 and move.
And I'm not going to lie, I was looking at their pictures, and as in the words of some of our favorite podcasters, it's always the husband, they were very handsome women.
Oh, okay. That...
Yeah. Very that's handsome women.
That's unfortunate for them.
So, one thing that escaped good old Dorothy's knowledge was that when she was sending her luggage, it wasn't being sent to Iowa. He had her send it to Fairmont, West Virginia, in care of Cornelius O. Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, West Virginia is very close to Quiet Dell, West Virginia, where him and his wife lived. Are we starting to pick up on what he's doing?
Yeah.
So now we're talking about she went to go live with him and she fell off the face of the earth too. So now there's two women and three kids that are missing. And in August of 1931, the police began investigating their disappearances. They started with Pearson, who was found emptying Mrs. Eicher's house. So he was at Asta's house emptying the contents. He wasn't married to her. Why would he do that?
Yeah. That's...
Now, they found love letters that actually led them to Quiet Dell, where Pearson lived under the name of Harry Powers, which was not even his real name, with his wife. Yeah. He was arrested, and his house in Quiet Dell was searched. Now, remember I said he built a garage and a basement?
Uh-huh.
Police searched that garage and basement, and they found four rooms located directly under the garage. In those four rooms, they found bloody clothing, hair, a burned bank book, and a small bloody footprint of a child.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They couldn't find a body, though. They started searching his property, and they couldn't find anything. They just found that there was a crime scene. Until a 15-year-old bystander, a boy who helped him dig a drainage sewage ditch on his property, tipped them into where it was. Oh. Inside the freshly filled-in ditch, they dug up the bodies of Asta Eicher, her three children, and Dorothy Lemke. Evidence and autopsy reports showed that the two girls and their mother were strangled to death while the young boy's head was beaten in with a hammer.
Oh my God.
Dorothy was the last victim uncovered. She had also been strangled with a belt still wrapped around her neck. They found love letters in the trunk of his car, and he had written back to many women with the intention of stealing their money and killing them, just like he did with those two women. In fact, I read a quote that said they found piles of belongings that belonged to people and they didn't know who they belonged to. And he said, well, you caught me on 5. Do the other 50 matter?
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. What about his wife? Is his wife still alive?
Well, I would assume 1931, no. I would assume. I didn't look her up because kind of like it reminds me of the Gilgo Beach killer. I don't know if if you follow him too. Married man with a daughter and a stepson. And he would kill women, specifically escorts in Long Island. I can't talk today. Anytime his wife and kids would go away on conventions. Like I believe they did like the cosplays and stuff like that. They did some kind of convention. And every time they go away, he'd murder somebody. I'm wondering if his wife Luella was kind of like the Gilgo Beach killer's wife and just didn't know what was going on. Although witnesses said they would often see women and sometimes women with children just show up at the property and be escorted into the garage and never to be seen again.
And nobody in his neighborhood who was witnessing this happening said anything.
Nobody said anything about it until after it had already been done. Which insane to me. Like, you see women. The other thing is, okay, if the neighbors saw women show up to the property, didn't Luella see women? Like, she wasn't that she was out of town. It wasn't out of town. I don't understand. So he apparently told authorities he actually copped to everything. He told them exactly what his plans were, exactly what he was doing, and the fact that he enjoyed killing people on a sexual level. He enjoyed binding and gagging and gassing women in the chambers of his garage. He also really enjoyed strangling them and hanging them. In fact, the day that they arrested him, they did find a noose in that basement, still hanging from the rafters. Another odd twist of fate is the day that they arrested him, he had already planned to meet up and marry another woman that day.
Oh, thank God they caught him.
She was safe. In fact, he actually enjoyed killing so much he thought he'd expose. Do you remember little Harry? 12-year-old Harry? Mm-hmm. He made 12-year-old Harry watch as he was murdering his mother. And when Harry started losing it, he attacked him with a hammer. That's how Harry died. So this went on. This became a huge, huge story for the area. And so much so that they had to move him. They were going to keep him in the local jail. They had to move him to Moundsville Prison so that he could be held safely. Oh, wait, so he would not be attacked by the mob that was trying to get him. His case was so sensational that they had to hold his trial in an opera house.
Wow.
Tell me that's not insane, right?
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking about the whole them, you know, moving him so that he's safe. And it's like, you know, if I had been an officer at the time, I mean, I understand that they're trying to, you know, possibly find more bodies, more people and stuff that he could have possibly killed. But I also would have been very tempted to just let them take him and, oh, I don't know what happened to him. I mean, you know.
Oops. And, you know, and it's a very real threat too. Also in prisons, men that hurt women, but especially children, they don't make it out alive. They have to keep them in special quarantined areas so they don't get killed by the inmates these days. I'm not sure if anything else ever, if, you know, anybody else knew what to do with him or if that was still the thing then. But now he would have been absolutely murdered.
100%, which I'm so glad that there's, you know, not that some of them deserve to be in there, because probably they're some in of them there don't, for
sure.
drugs or, you know, really minor things. But the fact that they're in there and they're willing to give up their freedom to get rid of some of the, you know, world's worst people that exist.
Right.
Thank you, prisoners.
Thank you for carrying out vigilante justice in cases. Like, we're not saying eye for an eye, but sometimes you can turn an eye.
Yeah, when it comes to kids,
sometimes you can. I mean, I don't think children should ever be hurt. Now, shortly following his arrest, he did receive two black eyes allegedly from falling down a staircase during his questioning. Me thinks he didn't fall down some stairs.
He just, you know, he lost his footing.
So damn clumsy.
Ugh. I mean,
you fall down, little bitch. Get back up. Let's make you fall down again, little bitch. I mean,
oh, did that hurt? Oh no, you've fallen again.
So do that. Like, I'm not saying he didn't deserve it.
Right.
And like I said, on September 20th of 1931, the lynch mob did attempt to take him from the jail, and they had to be dispersed with fire hoses and tear gas. I didn't even know they had tear gas back then, but they did. He had a 5-day trial. Numerous witnesses testified that, based on the evidence in his home, that he had been with the victims, picked up their luggage, and he also testified for himself.
What an idiot.
Okay, rule of thumb, if you're ever on trial for something that looks a little sus, like you might have actually done it, even if you didn't, don't take the fucking stand. It just makes you look worse.
Yeah.
Every trial I've ever watched, which, of course, you know, crime junkie that I am, I watch trials for fun. Like, it's fun. What was the one, the Murdaugh case, when he got on the stand? That fucked him up. Okay. Ted Bundy got on the stand, acted as his own attorney. What happened to him?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of examples of out there that, you know, prove that getting on the stand and defending yourself does not work, but more power to you if you think you can do it.
Exactly. Now, on December 12th of 1931, he was sentenced to death. So talk about a quick trial. Like, today, like, the Lori Vallow case took, what, 3 years for her to actually go to trial, mainly because of COVID. But, like, you don't hear of anything where the crime was committed in June and then they're actually formally charged and found guilty by December. You don't see that these days.
Not very often, no.
And also the fact that he had two black eyes after questioning, that kind of would, probably would not have been found guilty now because of police brutality. But this was a different era. The 30s were just after Prohibition. It was a little bit crazier. Now, remember I told you March 18th would come back into play?
Mm-hmm.
He was hanged on March 18th, 1932.
Wow.
I came up with a story idea on March 18th of this year.
You know, I think there's a guardian angel up there somewhere that's like, hey, here's a good idea.
Right? I mean, it was enough to scare me. I was like, I don't ever want to touch a dating site again in my life. No, I'll just die single. like, no, it was scary. And to think that these women were, they all thought they had found love. They thought that they had found their person. And it turned out their person was just a carefully constructed lie from the ground up. A very married lie, who also married his wife the same way he found these women, and he married her so he could get her money too, because she owned a farm and a grocery store.
You know, I've had my fair share of toads, okay?
Right.
And some of them I met on dating sites. The one before I got married to my husband, who was a meth head.
Oh my gosh.
I met him on I met his cousin, and then I met him, but it was all on a dating site. So, you know, and then through him, then I ended up meeting my husband, who happened to be, you know, just a lonely veteran who was drinking a lot. And in order to get my attention and realized that I wasn't going to date a drunk, he stopped drinking and got physically active and then pursued me. So, you know, he made changes to himself in order to gain.
That's a healthy way to do it. Like, if somebody can't be around your toxicity, then you change the toxicity and come back when you're healed. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this guy clearly had serious issues. He said in quotes, Harry Powers said that he enjoyed watching these people kill. He enjoyed killing these women so much that it made him hotter than any brothel he'd ever seen.
That is disgusting.
So there was no hope for this guy. He was a complete piece of shit. I mean, there's no saving or salvaging that. In fact, I actually read I found a newspaper article where nobody wanted to claim his damn body after he died.
You know, I don't blame them.
He was buried in a potter's field at the prison. So nobody wanted to claim this man, even though he was a married man. His wife didn't want him. She's like, fuck that. I'm not taking this body. I'm not taking responsibility for this. So yeah, I mean, it's incredibly sad. And there are stories like this that happen to this day where women are being lured to hotel rooms for hookups, which, oh God, no, never. No ding ding without a relationship. We don't do this. But if that's not, that's your thing, cool, good on you, girl, but be careful. There are diseases and men who like to kill women. So that's a thing. But even now, this is still happening. So I thought it was relevant to cover this story because who knows how many single women actually listen to our podcast or how many people that know single women that are out there on dating sites, they need to be aware that you need to be careful.
Yeah.
Because
you're not going on these sites and just finding, you know, weird, creepy dudes that, you know, you go on one date with and then never talk to again. There's some people on these sites that once you meet them in person, even if it's in a very public place and you have your best friend with you or a few best friends, these men will stalk the shit out of you and then eventually kill you. So you have to be very, very careful.
I'm not going to say it's always been a bad experience for me. My last relationship, I met him online, met him in a public place, my work. You know, it was okay. We won't go into detail on that. I met my friend who's now deceased ex. I met him on a dating site. He's still to this day, I consider him one of the best people I've ever known, even though he's no longer here. Really? I met my long-term, I guess, on-off person on there. And we actually did wind up meeting at work because we wound up working for the same place. And people thought we were, like, so much alike. And this was after we stopped talking. So there was that. But it's not all bad. It can be good, but you have to be very careful because not everybody out there has your heart. Not everybody out there has your best interests in their minds. Right. So men and women, if there are men listening, you be careful too, because there are those thought rockets out there that don't really care about you and want your money or just, you know, they want you for clout or gifts or whatever. Just be careful. Keep your eyes open.
Men can fall under the, you know, serial killer thing too. I mean,
I'm sure there are women that do it. It's not as often. Right. Women, we like, from all studies I read, in fact, I read an article last week, because you know me, that said women are not as likely to be serial killers because we are not as likely to be actual psychopaths, meaning that we want to inflict harm on random strangers. Women are more likely to kill somebody that they actually know and have feelings for.
Right.
And usually we don't do it by, like, we do it in nice, cleaner methods, like poison, because it's more personal. Like, it's not usually bloody, because what woman has time to clean that shit up?
Most don't, but...
You know. I have no intention of ever killing somebody, but if I did, it would not be messy.
Yeah, if I were to do it, I honestly, I would probably be one of those ones that ends up in jail for trying to have a hired hitman do it.
I have a relation that actually did that. You know about that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That relative doesn't know. I guess they don't know that I know, but yeah, they did try to have their cop husband killed on duty twice.
You know, to each his own.
Exactly. And I won't name them. They know who they are. But yeah, be careful out there, people. Not everybody is who they say they are.
Right.
And with that, that concludes my story time for today. I hope you're terrified.
Well, not me personally, but I know that maybe some of our listeners are maybe second guessing what they're doing as far as dating apps if they're single. Me, I could care less because I'm married.
You're not single. You're married, right. And that's a permanent situation. Yep. You know what? I envy you, because at some point I would like to find my forever person. I would like to find the reason I don't have to find anyone else's favorite color anymore, because I don't really give a damn. I want to skip the surface stuff and go straight to, like, are we getting groceries together? Who's changing the oil? Like, you know, that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Mine has his shortcomings, but they are very few and far between in comparison to a lot of the pieces of shit that I dated before him or that you have dated. And so, you know, it is what it is.
Exactly. Well,
basically, you're just picking your piece of shit that you're willing to just deal with.
Exactly. Somebody said I should go. They said something like, your ideal mate or your perfect mate. And I'm like, the perfect mate doesn't exist. I'm willing to accept warts and bumps and thorns. And, you know, there are things I'm willing to overlook. But don't be a serial killer. Don't be a user. Don't be a cheater. Don't be a liar. So that's all I'm asking for. That's it. Yep. It's not a huge list. But we are out of time. So remember, follow us on all the things social media.
Or you can email us at iutterlycan't.gmail. I can't. Yeah.
you know,
it's the end of the day.
All right. So, and join our Patreon. So, y'all know the drill. Y'all know what we're looking for. And with that, we'll say
bye.